Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, Melanie, this has been a very nice week. We had a nice week of weather last time we talked. We had another beautiful week, and today was a particularly beautiful day.
It was very nice.
Did you get outside much today?
A little bit.
I knew you were doing some baking.
I baked some muffins and made a batch of boiled eggs.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. Making boiled eggs in R2-D2. I've mentioned before, our Instapot is R2-D2.
I don't know if you've mentioned it, actually.
Our Instapot is R2-D2. It has an R2-D2 wrap, like magnetic wrap on it, that I picked up on Etsy, and it's awesome.
It's magnetic?
It's magnetic, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's how it sticks to it. Yeah, it's really cool.
Oh, I thought it was like a plastic foam sort of thing.
Nope. Magnetic. Okay. It's really
learn something new every day.
Father Andrew has one, too. The same thing. I don't know if he got the idea from me, but I'm a trendsetter, you know.
Did he get it from you, or did you get it from him?
No. I was first.
Oh, I see.
No. I was first. Anyway, you got out this week. To a place other than the house and the store for groceries. You went to a place with the kids without me.
We did. Although
I was recording.
As field trips went, it was sort of
weird.
Not entirely successful.
Welcome to 2020. Something weird's going on.
Right. So we decided to go to Cape Cod Canal. Even though it's kind of late for the herring run, we thought we've had an enjoyable.
You gotta explain something.
Okay, I will. We've had enjoyable field trips there. So Cape Cod Canal is the canal that divides Cape Cod from the mainland.
Yes,
it's man-made.
It turned Cape Cod into an island.
Right. So it goes all the way from Massachusetts Bay down to Buzzards Bay, and it's a shipping canal. And there's two big bridges that go from
the Sagamore Bridge and the Bourne Bridge.
Yes. So anyway, there is also though a herring run, which leads from the canal up to a pond, which I think is called Herring Pond.
Herring, like salmon, swim upstream to spawn.
Right. And so every year, it's exciting. The herring swim upstream. And there's lots of little herring ladders around the state where there are sort of man-made.
A fish ladder is like a series of man-made.
Jumps
that allows them to jump up because a lot of the rivers have now had their courses altered and all that sort of stuff. So man has come back and said, oh, poor little fishy, let's get you home. And we've made little steps for them.
It's an exciting field trip, I have to say.
Yeah.
When the herring are jumping and going up, lots and lots of them. It's exciting. And in the past, we've had some great field trips organized by other lovely homeschool moms that I know who found rangers to give us presentations and talks and like. We've even had the chance to, like, have the ranger catch herring and have the kids look at them closely, which is really fun. So feeling sort of nostalgic for that, even though we're really kind of past the end of the run.
The herring season.
I thought there might be some herring still, like.
Some latecomers.
The latecomers in the ladder.
Dude, okay. all the good ones are taken.
Right.
But don't worry, there's plenty of. It's in the sea.
And even if there weren't any herring, it's still a really nice, like,
it's a nice day out.
It's a nice day out. The canal is pretty. There's boats going up and down.
There's a walkway along the canal.
Right. It's a nice park. So I entered Cape Cod Canal Visitor's Center into the GPS, which was a mistake because it's actually Cape Cod Canal Herring Run Visitor's Center.
Which is what you wanted.
That's what I wanted. Right. So the Cape Cod Canal Visitor Center is actually on Cape Cod on the other side of the Sagamore Bridge. And that's where we ended up. I didn't really realize until we were like, oh, no, we're like, we can't get off the highway now. We're dead. We're We're committed to crossing the Sagamore Bridge.
We're heading to the Cape, kids.
The Sagamore Bridge is actually kind of cool, though. It's a really tall bridge. It's high so that big ships can get underneath it.
Uh-huh.
And so it's kind of dizzying, kind of exciting. And the Cape Cod Canal Visitor Center is actually really nice. There's a little beach there and a jetty, and it's sort of right at the entrance to the canal, the Massachusetts Bay side entrance to
right,
the canal.
The northern side.
Right, the northern side, for those who don't know Massachusetts geography.
We have listeners who don't. Yep.
So we got there, and the kids were like, this isn't where we expected to be. And I said, well, let's get out of the car and explore anyway, because we've had a nice adventure here at this beach before. We went with a homeschool group and a ranger, and we explored the tidal zone and found all sorts of little animals and things. And so I thought, that's a nice little beach. So we walked up to the beach, and there were a lot of cars in the parking lot. Some of the parking spaces had been closed so that it wouldn't get too crowded because of, you know, social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
But we found a parking spot, and we wandered up to the beach, and there weren't too many people. Most of the people were actually on the jetty fishing. There was almost no one on the beach, which was not surprising because it was actually cloudy and 64 degrees and the fog had rolled in. And so
it's a classic Massachusetts summer.
It was a classic New England summer day at the beach. Right. And the beach was covered with seaweed, like big, thick, matted, bright pink Pepto-Bismol pink seaweed, which was interesting. We spent some time wondering about the color of the seaweed. We saw some buffleheads. They're a kind of duck, a sea-going duck, swimming off the beach. And we had a nice little walk. And then we walked back to the car. And
did you ever get to the herring run?
Well, what happened then was we went back across the bridge and we got to the Herring Run Visitor Center, and that parking lot was jam-packed. I have never seen it that full.
Really?
And I looked at the large numbers of people, and then I looked at our children who were not really willing to actually put on the masks that they had brought, and I sort of said, I don't think this is going to happen. Because in order to get over to the herring run, we would have to go through
the crowds.
So we unpacked our sandwiches and we had a picnic lunch in the car while looking at the boats going up and down the canal.
Oh, fun.
And watching all the people who were largely not wearing masks and social distancing.
God bless them.
And Memorial Day was maybe tactically not the best day.
Yeah, that's the thing to remember is that it was a Memorial Day holiday.
I didn't really remember. I mean, I'm sort of like timeless. It's pandemic. Nobody keeps holidays, right? Except evidently.
What day is it today?
except evidently more people were out than I expected.
Also, well, wasn't it like the first day of like the reduction in the lockdown, too?
Was it?
I don't know. Something like that. Like, it wasn't like phase one. I don't know. I can't keep track of all the stuff. But there might have been like the first day that they allowed certain things, people out of their houses or something.
Certain things to be open.
Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know. These days.
In any case, so we didn't actually make our goal. It was kind of fortuitous that we got to the other side and the beach. Otherwise,
if we'd gone there first,
I don't think we would have thought, let's go across the Sagamore and go to, I mean, maybe I would have, but I don't know if that I would have. Unfortunately, we didn't take as much time on the beach as we could have if we had known that
the other
location
was
going to be
packed.
But we had a drive. We listened to our audiobook on the way down and back. It's a good hour drive down and back. So that was 2 hours worth of audiobook, which the kids, we haven't really listened to it much since last summer because we haven't been going anywhere.
Which book was it?
So we're listening to the fourth book in the Melendee series by Elizabeth Enright. This book is called A Spider Web for Two.
Ah.
It's about a family of four kids called the Melendees. And they go on adventures. Spider Web for Two involves the oldest kids have moved out of the house or boarding school or whatever. And it's just the two youngest who are home by themselves, missing their older brothers and sisters. And so somebody in the family, we haven't yet discovered who, is creating a scavenger hunt? Like, is it, what do you call it? When you go find clues, you find a clue and it leads you to the next clue, which leads you to the next clue, which leads you to an execute clue. Not really a scavenger hunt.
Treasure hunt.
Treasure hunt.
Maybe.
Right. It's like a treasure hunt.
Yeah.
And it's taken them like months. Like, these clues are really difficult and it takes them weeks sometimes to figure out the clues. And so it's.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of an exciting adventure. Like, yeah. they're exploring their neighborhood, looking for clues.
You know, that's the thing. We went to the farmer's market again this week. And it's the social distance farmer's market, which is drive through. But we did get to listen to the more of our audiobook, Coup Club, the Arthur Ransom books. And I'm like, you know, it's been, what, 8 months since we listened to this last? Or maybe not that long, but it's been a long. Well, it might be. It's been a long time since we listened to it before. I'm like, we need to get in the car. Like, we only listen to that when I'm in the car because I'm listening with you guys. And right. It's like,
so we have multiple books depending on what mix of people is in the car.
But we need to stick. I need to go places with you guys because I want to get to the end of this book.
Right. And there's several more books in the series.
Because are the hullabaloos on the Margoletta going to get a hold of Tom? That's the question. I'm concerned here and it's taking forever. They're off on the Teasel to the somewhere in the rivers of England.
The Norfolk Broads.
The Norfolk Broads. Which is a great name. That'd be like a girl band name. The Norfolk Broads. It would only make sense to people from England, but it would be otherwise.
Or
Arthur Ransom fans. So it sounds like a good day.
It was a good day.
Yeah.
On the whole, a good day. An unexpected sort of random adventure day, but we got out of the house.
Yep.
It was nice. We got fresh air.
So I have a note here to talk about Bella's astronomy merit badge, the online virtual. Astronomy merit. I'm not sure there's actually much to say about it. She's taking it.
She's taking a merit badge in astronomy, and excited.
I'd mentioned that that they were going to do it before, but there's not really much to update on that, so I might as well.
She's interestingly enough, she's getting much more excited about it now that because today we watched.
Oh, so that's the other thing. We watched the Crew Dragon. Well, yesterday we watched the Crew Dragon launch. Today we watched the docking, which was that was a bit of a fortuitous happenstance. So yesterday, Saturday, I knew that it had been delayed from Wednesday to Saturday. And I knew intellectually, I knew, I should try to watch that. Well, after we got from the farmer's market and I was doing some other things around the house and I sat down, I think I was eating lunch. Yeah. Oh, I was recording. I was recording A Mysterious World with Jimmy. And once I was done with that, I had to run to the store up to the Lowe's and came back, sat down, had lunch. And while I'm like flipping through Facebook on my iPad, I'm like, someone had linked to the live stream. So I'm like, oh, cool. And it was like 30 minutes to lunch. I'm like, this is perfect timing. So I hit the live stream. And so we watched it for the countdown and all the kids finally, eventually saw what I was doing. I gathered around and we watched the countdown and it was thrilling. It was exciting. I mean, this was. I think Bella asked me, do you remember the Apollo launches? Not quite that old. I was less than 1 year old when Apollo 11 landed on the moon. But I think the first I might remember Apollo Soyuz, like a little bit of that, the excitement in the house about it when the American and the Russian spacecraft connected up in orbit in 1975-ish. So I might remember a little bit of that. I definitely remember the first space shuttle launch in 1981. That is a foundational moment in my life.
I think I remember the Challenger explosion. Honestly, that's like my first.
Yeah.
I think we probably did see the space shuttle launch, but I was really young.
Yeah.
I know the Challenger wasn't the first time I'd seen.
What, seven, six?
In 81, I was seven.
Seven, yeah.
But. I mean, I'm pretty sure that I had seen the space shuttle launch before the Challenger explosion, but it's ingrained on my memory. Like I was in, fifth or sixth grade, and I remember the teacher wheeling the TV into the classroom so that we could watch. Yeah,
Krista McAuliffe go up.
Yes.
Yeah, I was a senior in high school, and I remember at lunch, someone coming in and saying that, did you hear about the Challenger exploding? And I'm like, dude, that's not even funny. Don't joke about that. And no, it's like, no, really. And that hit me hard because at that time, my goal was I was going to Boston University. I was going to get an aerospace engineering degree. I was going into Navy ROTC, become a pilot. I was going to become an astronaut. That was my goal. So it was So did, and all, that kind of started in 1981 when I saw the space shuttle go up first time with Crippen and Young. So watching this Crew Dragon, which is significant, which is the first manned mission to Earth orbit from U.S. soil in 9 years. I said it right.
Yes.
It's not the first manned mission from U.S. soil in 9 years. In 2018, the Virgin Galactic Starship to Unity went suborbital from Las Cruces, New Mexico, from the Cross, New Mexico. Uh-huh. But it was a big deal. And watching it, it was so, like, for one thing, technology has advanced so far in just the visual presentation of things. It was so clear on screen.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, like, oh, much more exciting to watch than just, like, watching a little dot on the screen.
Oh, so, yeah. And the countdown, seeing the guys in the module, the sleekness of the spaceship, how they've made it so sleek and futuristic.
Yeah, it's pretty cool looking.
And then, and then the launch and praying, like literally we were praying. I was praying as it was lifting off. Please protect them. Please protect them. Please let it go well. Don't let anything bad happen. And they got up there. It was awesome. And then we saw the first stage separation. You guys saw the Falcon land on the ship, right?
Actually the video cut off.
Like, oh,
right. As it was landing.
Ah, bummer. I had gotten up already, but yeah, that was cool. So then this morning, as we're getting ready to watch Mass on TV with Cardinal Sean on YouTube, on the Apple TV, I'd pulled up the Apple TV, and I'm like, I was thinking we were waiting for you to come into the room before you hit play.
I think we were waiting for a child to use the restroom.
Oh, yes, that's what it was. I'm like, oh, look, two slots over from the Mass is the live stream from NASA. What's going on with them? And I flipped over. Sure enough, they were getting ready for the docking maneuver. They were going to dock the Crew Dragon.
We actually had time to watch all of the Mass before we got to the docking.
Right. The child came back. We watched Mass. When Mass is over, we flipped over back to the NASA live stream. And sure enough, yeah, they were still, you know, coming in. It was so exciting. I mean, it wasn't like seat of your pants thrill a minute because it was so slow.
It was very slow. The kids, I think that was impressive in its own way, though, to the kids, like how slow it was. They were really thoughtful about it. Like, oh, yeah, that makes sense that they would have to go really slow and be careful. And It was kind of interesting to see them, like, thinking about why.
Why deliberate? Why slow and steady wins the race?
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think is its own sort of lesson, I think.
Yes. What was the slogan I picked up recently? Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. You know, go take it easy, and that's the fastest way. That's the way to be fast about things. You know, be deliberate, be smooth. Don't rush. Well, the funny thing is they have SpaceX has a simulator on their website, which has the same interface that the astronauts have for the docking. And you can go through the docking simulation. You know, you can control the spacecraft as it docks with the space station. Well, the first time I did it, I burned up in the atmosphere. I went, maybe I should read the instructions again for the first time. And so I went back. I'm like, oh, okay. And then very minute adjustments and very slowly approach, and you have to approach under 0.3 meters per second. That's what actually they said.
The interesting thing was, actually, while we were watching the docking, at some point somebody actually said, if you're doing the simulator, take note, because this is the speed at which you need to go. And I thought that was really interesting, like they were sort of breaking the fourth wall almost.
Well, this is one of the things that SpaceX has really been about, is they want to make, I mean, NASA's been really good at this too, but SpaceX has taken it to the next level. Their marketing, there's so much marketing in what they do, because they're producing a product. They're producing, I mean, NASA always was too, but it's different from when it's a government agency and a private corporation. There's a difference in their approach. And it's very interesting to see this, this attempt. I mean, just right down to the design of the spacesuits. A Hollywood costume designer designed the spacesuits, and then they've made the function fit the form, whereas NASA engineers always, you know, we need function, the form will follow the function. But Elon Musk wanted the suits to look cool.
They do look
kind of cool. And in fact, it was interesting. We were talking about this on Secrets of Tech last week. there's a whole category of costume designers in Hollywood that specialize in spacesuits.
That doesn't surprise me, but it's kind of cool.
It is kind of cool.
One of the things the kids and I were talking about, actually, you were in the other room by that point.
Megan Van Geeks.
Well, we were talking about, like, there was a very slow part of the, they had docked and then they were waiting to, like, go through the entire very long checklist of equalizing pressure and getting the electrical systems hooked up and everything before they could actually leave the
capsule. Open the door.
And open the door. Yeah. And we didn't actually end up seeing them open the door because it took so long. But while we were waiting, they had a camera on eventually in the capsule and you could see the astronauts moving around, like packing things up. And I said, you know, if you think about it, like somebody designed that bag that he's zipping up right now and somebody designed that, you know, that case and that cabinet and somebody welded that. And those people are watching now saying, I made that.
Right.
I did that. And they said, well, that's like the least glamorous job. I'm like, well, okay, but it might be the least glamorous, like not nearly as glamorous as being an astronaut. But can you imagine being
but
like
your thing got into space,
like looking at it and saying, I did that?
It was one of the funniest bits of The Big Bang Theory was that. What was his name? Not Sheldon, not Raj, not Leonard. Howard.
Howard.
It was an engineer who helped design. He was on the team that designed the toilet on the space station. And ended up having to go up to the space station to fix it. And so he became an astronaut, but because he had to go fix the space station's toilet. He was like the most expensive plumbing call, you know, ever. They made fun of him for being a glorified plumber, et cetera, et cetera. But someone had to make that, you know?
Right.
One of the things about that someone mentioned, one of the commentators mentioned, was like, when it's NASA designing things, it's got to be reliable. It's got to be proven. We don't take risks. We don't try new things unless we absolutely have to. Whereas private enterprise are like, no, let's try it. Let's go with this thing. We'll test it the heck out of it. We'll do this, but we're willing to try this. We'll try something new. And so you end up getting these advances that you in the technology you wouldn't otherwise. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. Very cool.
We also followed up with some watching some YouTube videos of various astronauts doing tours of the space station. Lucy was very fascinated with the how do you brush your teeth and again using the bathroom. We saw that and looking through the different modules and everything. It was really fascinating.
Did you see any of the Chris Hadfield videos?
We did not this time. We have in the past watched some of Chris Hadfield.
He's a natural presenter in
yeah.
So
he's
well.
his stuff is really. This was female astronaut. I can't remember her name. And it's gone.
Yeah. There's actually surprisingly a lot of them, a lot of astronauts. So
yes.
That was fun. That was thrilling.
And so now Bella is much more excited about, like, she's like, oh, I had forgotten how much I love space. And now I really want to do more space.
Well, yeah, she wanted to get outside and look at the stars tonight with the stargazing app. Hopefully she got out there for her, and that's for her astronomy merit badge, which is good. So mentioned that we watched Mass again this morning, even though in the Archdiocese of Boston, parishes have started to reopen, including our parish. Our parish had its first public Mass today. We have chosen to wait a little bit. I don't know how long we'll wait. We're going to take it week by week. We want to make sure, well, you know, we have a few people who have in our family who have underlying causes, health issues. So we don't want to take any chances there. And we want to make sure that they iron the bugs out first. So
and that the children get comfortable with the whole process of wearing a mask.
They're wearing a mask for the whole mass, the mass mask.
Yeah.
Our parish is doing a little differently. We're, like a lot of parishes are, you sign up for each mass each week. Like you sign up for a slot because, as everyone knows, there's only so many spaces available. They have to reduce capacity. And but our parish is, you sign up for a pew and that's your spot from now until we don't do
this
anymore.
What do they do if they run out of pews?
That's what I was wondering. And I mean, we signed up, but we weren't there this week. So
I feel kind of guilty because we've taken up,
we
didn't take up a pew that
someone else could use.
Somebody else didn't get one.
Yeah, I know. I feel bad.
On the other hand, if we waited too long, there might not have space for seven people to sit together.
That was my concern is if I didn't go this week and reserve our pew for us, that we wouldn't that we'd be locked out in perpetuity until the everything was lifted, all the
although I think I suspect that they probably would have worked with us, like shifted people around if we really needed to.
Are they going to shift everybody around just to accommodate one family? I don't know.
They might. I mean,
I don't know. Well,
I would rather not have to put somebody through that trouble. Yeah. I don't know.
That's a hypothetical. There's no way to know for sure. But yeah. So, well, you know, we may go next week. We may not. We'll see where we stand in a week. But it's weird times, as we all know. So let's move on to talk about food.
Food. Yay.
Let me start by saying it's very interesting how when the weather turns, the spring comes, the grill is now in play for us. Our creativity and our ability and desire to do more different kinds of dishes suddenly opens up.
Yes.
It's so weird. Like somewhere like from around what January through April, it's really we're really in a get in a rut. We make the same things over and over again and have a hard time breaking out of that.
Yeah.
But once the weather turns, for one thing, there's a little more variety in the stores.
A little.
I mean, we're sort of making do with whatever's there. So there's enough variety that we can do things. Although really frustrating, just so you know that not everything is always a perfect meal for us. Saturday night, I was going to grill a whole chicken. We haven't done that in a while, that you just bought the day before at the supermarket.
Although it was on
the sale rack.
I should know better because I haven't had great luck with the sale chickens.
That is not the first time we've had a problem with the chicken that was on sale.
Anyway, you opened it up and it smelled. It was not good.
Not good. Pizza night. We ended up having to order pizza because it was too late to do to defrost anything else, or we had been kind of counting on that. So it was really frustrating. So other things that we've made, we're on a kebab kick for some reason. So last week you got it in your mind to make chicken shawarma.
I did.
And for those of you who've seen the Avengers and the first Avengers movie, at the end of it, in the post credit scene, they go out for chicken shawarma. So you have all like the heroes sitting in a shawarma shop eating shawarma.
I have not seen that yet, so yeah. I missed it.
So I'll let you describe it, since you're the one who came up with the recipe. So what is chicken shawarma for those who might not know?
Okay, well, so what we actually made was sort of faux shawarma.
Faux shawarma.
Just to be clear. So real chicken shawarma, it's kind of along the same idea as gyros. It's chicken that has been sliced and then pressed onto a spit and then cooked slowly with spices. And cooked slowly.
Right.
While being marinated in juices and stuff. And then it's thin sliced and served usually with pita, sometimes over rice.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that in order to really make true shawarma, you have to have a shawarma spit.
Yes. I'm sorry. That is a funny name.
It is a funny thing. Anyway, so a lot of people, though, who like shawarma don't have the specialized
equipment. Yeah.
And I found a recipe. I've actually found several recipes of people who were making sort of just like shawarma.
Pseudo shawarma.
At home.
Yes.
So I was following a recipe from a cooking blog that I go to frequently for Middle Eastern type food. She's actually an Israeli cook. Her name is Tori Avi. I sort of borrowed her recipe and then like
modified it
and looked at some other stuff. And I don't know. Anyway, so it's meat that you can do either grilled or in the oven. Like oven is perfectly respectable with lots of spices, like a nice spice rub that has lots of different Mediterranean kinds of spices, cumin and allspice and cinnamon and coriander and stuff. Then after you've cooked it once, you thin slice it and you
kind of chop it into bits.
Chop it into bits. And then you cook it again in a skillet with more olive oil on the stove.
Yeah. You're kind of trying to give it that an extra like crispiness.
And an extra flavor. It just, it really intensifies the flavor a lot when you cook it that extra time.
Yep.
And so it was pretty good. I got really bold and experimental, and I made homemade pita. And then I served it with a cucumber and tomato and mint salad. And I made some homemade tzatziki, which is like a cucumber yogurt sauce, if you don't know about that.
Yep.
And it was really good.
Mm,
it was very tasty.
It was very good. And
I think 6 out of 7 kids, I mean, 4 out of 5 kids liked it. 6 out of 7 of us.
6 out of 7 of us, 4 out of 5 kids.
How many kids do we have? I don't know.
Did a couple more show up over there?
Yeah,
it was good. It was, and cooking it on the grill went really well. I almost don't know if I needed the skewers. I have a theory that there might be something to cooking them on the skewer where they're close together makes it different than if they're just these big pieces cooking separately.
I think it probably makes a difference.
I'd be curious to see if there's any science in that, but, it worked out pretty well. After our last, kebab meal that we done before, with the
teriyaki kebabs.
The teriyaki kebabs. I'd ordered more kebabs. I only had like a half a dozen.
Skewers.
Sorry. Yes. Skewers. And so I got a bunch more in. And so that made it a lot easier. I didn't have to, you know, re-skewer skewers halfway through cooking, which was better.
And then the other skewer meal we did this week was...
Kofta.
Which are a Turkish sort of meatball.
That threw the kids for a loop, by the way. They're like, it's not a meatball. It's like a meat stick on a skewer. Right.
Well, I mean, so the question is, if you want meatballs, but you want to cook them on the grill, how do you do that? Because obviously, like, round meatballs would fall through the grill. So,
yeah.
Basically, this is the basic idea.
They would
idea.
Fall off the skewer. Yeah.
Anyway, so you basically, you take the ground meat and you kind of squish it onto the skewer.
You form it around it, yeah.
Right. And then you refrigerate it to let it kind of set, and then you grill it.
So Anthony was really intent on this, like, is it more like a sausage without a casing?
I think I was trying to sell it to Ben by telling him it was like a sausage without a casing.
they were very confused by this dish.
Right. So I added a lot of spices to it.
You kind of really went a little creative on this one.
Right. Including we had some preserved lemons in the refrigerator, and I actually cut up half of a preserved lemon and put that in into the meatballs.
Yeah.
I also ground up some onion and bell pepper and garlic, and that was sort of mixed in with the meat. It was very flavorful, just the meat itself. I did not have lamb in my mix, which
you basically used meatloaf mix.
It was meatloaf mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we would often have lamb in our meatloaf mix, but this was just beef and pork.
The beef pork veal stuff beef that pork veal, comes right. pre-mixed at the grocery store.
Right. Yeah. The lamb would have added a nice flavor to it.
It would have been really good with lamb. I want to try it again.
We had leftover at tzatziki, so we ate it with that.
Right.
And rice.
And rice.
And rice, yeah. So that was good. And then continuing our ground meat.
Ground meat on the grill?
Ground meat on the grill. So tonight I made... a grilled Vietnamese pork patties with vermicelli and salad, which is also called bun cha. And I got this recipe out of America's Test Kitchen. And it's really pretty straightforward. You make a sauce, which is a lot of fish sauce, chili pepper, some sugar, lime juice. So it's this very flavorful sauce and hot water to dissolve the sugar and garlic. And, then you take a little more fish sauce and black pepper and a little sugar, something else, I forget. And you mix that with the meat. Then you form the meat into patties. You put the patties on the grill. You char the patties, both sides. And they actually cook fairly quick. I was a little surprised at how quickly they cook. And then when they're done, you take them and you put them in the sauce, like in the bowl that's full of all this like liquid. And you leave them, and you leave them in the sauce for like 5 minutes to soak up the sauce.
They were really good.
They were really good, and you serve it over, you know, cucumber, vermicelli. So the vermicelli was a bit of a bust, a little bit. It was okay, but
It wasn't really rinsed, I think, long enough.
It was a sticky mess. I did not realize how much you needed to rinse the vermicelli after it was cooked.
I have made that mistake in the past and learned from my mistake. And
when you make like vermicelli, you have to really, really rinse a lot to get all the starch off.
There's a lot of starch.
Yeah. So I was rushing things and I didn't rinse it enough. But we also made rice, luckily, so that worked out. And the kids ate all the vermicelli, so I'm not sure what there's no reason to complain about that.
Right. Once you added the sauce onto it, it actually kind of softened the noodles up a bit.
Fish sauce by itself is a stinky, stinky condiment.
It is gross.
You mix it with some garlic, some lime juice. The lime juice is the key. You mix it with lime juice and some sugar to cut some of the acidity.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes something entirely new. It's an amazing dish. Like the fish sauce lime sugar combination is amazing.
Yeah, the funny thing is, I remember when I was in high school taking Latin, and our teacher was explaining that one of the Romans' favorite condiments was garum.
Yes.
And garum in ancient Rome is not really anything at all like garam masala, the Indian spice mix. Because garum was basically just rotted fish made into like a fish sauce.
Right. You leave the fish to rot and then the juices from that drip out at the bottom.
And that's
how you make fish sauce.
That is the most disgusting thing. Who on earth would eat rotten fish? That's just gross. That's
also what sushi was originally.
Yeah.
They would bury the fish with the rice and then they would eat the rice. They would get rid of the gross fish bit, but then they would eat the rice because it would have that really awesome flavor.
And then eventually they realized we could eat the fish too.
Why are we throwing away the fish? Instead of burying the fish, we should put the fish on top of the rice. And that became a whole other thing. But nuoc mam is the fish sauce. And it's when you mix it with the, you mix fish sauce with these ingredients, it's magical. It's really amazing. And it's sort of the Vietnamese equivalent of soy sauce.
Right.
And for people who can't eat soy, like your sister, a lot of Vietnamese cuisine is accessible to them in ways that Chinese and Japanese and I think Korean even isn't, because I think there's still soy in Korean.
I think so.
So, and there are some Vietnamese dishes that have soy, don't get me wrong, but a lot of it doesn't. And Cambodian too is another one that uses fish sauce. It's that area, that Southeast Asian area,
right,
is much more about fish sauce than it is about soy. So, really, it was really flavorful and really easy to do on the grill. I mean, it was super easy. And we had a pretty good reviews. Ben didn't eat any of it.
Ben wouldn't even try it. Lucy ate like half of one patty. She wasn't a huge fan, although she did come back for like one last bite at the very end of the meal, which means she didn't hate it too much. Anthony and Sophie, I think, each ate three patties, two or three.
Two patties.
Oh, somebody had three. I think it was Sophie.
Hmm.
And then Bella even had one and a half.
Yeah, she did.
She said she didn't really like it, but it was served for dinner, so she was going to eat it anyway. But she went back for seconds, so I'm not sure what she was complaining about.
One thing I did was I put half the patties into the sauce like you're supposed to, and the other half I didn't. And I just left them to the side, without the sauce, just in case. And so that turned out to be the thing to do.
Right. I think even without the sauce, she wasn't a huge fan.
Yeah, yeah. But I still think we should be on our repertoire. And I've got a few more recipes I'm going to be trying that we picked up some stuff from grilling.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would put this in my...
It's going in the rotation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when we cook on the grill, we're still doing some cooking in the house. But the main dish is going on the grill, so we don't have to fire up the oven and the stove and heat up the house with it. We've pretty much cooked every meal on the grill in the past week, haven't we? Apart from the pizza.
Apart from the pizza.
Because we had fish on Friday that I cooked on the grill.
Right.
I didn't mention that because it was basically the same thing we made the week before. I think we pretty much have cooked every meal on the grill.
Which I'm a fan of.
Yes. Oh, did you make chili this week?
No,
that was the week before. Yeah, I think we made. I think every meal was on the grill this week. So I'm all for that. And the great thing is because I work from home, this wasn't like when I was working in an office, I couldn't get home in time to grill. So grilling was a weekend thing. Well, now we can grill every night, which is awesome. I'm a fan of that.
It also means that, like, there's a little bit less, I wouldn't say less work, because I'm still making all this, like, lots of the side dishes and that sort of thing. But I feel
it takes
like
a little bit off your plate.
It does. It makes me actually gives me more time to spend on what are we going to eat with this main meal and less focus on cooking the main dish.
All right, so let's move on to what we've been reading or watching, which I think is mostly things I've watched and read, because you haven't made a lot of progress in things.
Well, I've made progress.
I
haven't finished anything. I'm still reading Karis and the World of Wonders, which is still really good.
Fun thing is the author
Marla Yeomans.
She found our podcast last week,
and she actually listened to the podcast. Yay! She posted about it on Facebook, and we have a mutual friend who is the friend who actually recommended the book to me in the first place. And so, yeah, I got to have like a little chat with her, which was really exciting, fangirl moment. So I've been reading that. Actually, I did watch my friend Sally Thomas's book launch this week. So that's sort of It's a poetry book.
Yeah.
So the volume of poetry is called Motherland, and Sally Thomas did a 1-hour live stream read on Friday afternoon, and I got to tune into that. It's also available on YouTube, like she recorded it. So we can probably put a link to that in the show notes.
And I'll make a note to put a note, a link to that.
Anyway, it's a beautiful collection of poetry, decades in the making. Including one of, she read a lot of my favorite poems in it, and including some from the final sequence, which is called Rakeldis of Walsingham, she originally published it as a separate book, but she included the whole sequence in this collection. And it's sort of a poetry sequence about the shrine of Our Lady of Walsingham,
mm-hmm.
which was created because this noble woman, Rakeldis, had a vision in the 13th century? No. It was right before the Battle of Hastings. So it was like 11th century England. And that led to, she had a vision of Mary. Mary gave her a house tour.
Okay.
Of the house in Nazareth, where she had the angel Gabriel came to her, and so Mary.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Yes, okay. it was a vision of the house of the Annunciation.
Okay,
and Mary told Rakeldis to build the replica of the house in England,
and in Walsingham. Okay,
and it was one of these like typical stories you hear where they tried several times to build it and it kept falling down, and then eventually Mary got fed up and had some angels build it overnight. Great story. There's also a holy well there. This was a primary pilgrimage site in the Middle Ages. I mean, it was like second only to Canterbury for mm-hmm. pilgrims in the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
And of course, it was destroyed by Henry VIII.
Jerk.
Ironically, he had actually made pilgrimages to it himself before he decided that getting his own way and being head of the Church of England so he didn't have to listen to the Pope was more important.
And steal all the property.
And stealing all the property. It was really a property grab.
Right.
Rather than a religious issue, at least from Henry's perspective.
Yes.
Anyway, Sally Thomas, Motherland, it's a great collection.
Good. All right, so you did have something.
I recommend it. I did.
Yeah. So from the sublime to the ridiculous, I finally got around to watching Pacific Rim Uprising, which was the sequel to the blockbuster hit Pacific Rim, which is a Rock'em Sock'em robot versus kaiju movie. Kaiju are like Godzilla type monsters.
Okay, this sounds like totally not my bag.
Not your bag. This is like Transformers beats up Godzilla.
No.
I mean, it was okay. Like the first one was fun. You know, it was good. The second one had some serious plot holes. Starred John Boyega from Star Wars, Finn.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
That was good to have John Boyega in it. I mean, as a cheap rental on, you know, Apple TV, it was fine. I'd been meaning to watch it for a long time. Nothing right home about it. Nothing. It is what it is. If you want to see robots destroy cities, I mean, it's really like astonishing, like how they destroy the cities they're protecting from these monsters. Like they take these buildings out like left and right. Like whatever. It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. But this is where we are with these movies, the giant robot movies. So there was that. I also watched Mythic Quest is an Apple TV Plus series, and it's about a fictional game company, a video game company, the online video game, multiplayer online role-playing game called Mythic Quest. And it's a workplace comedy. So you have the various like The Office. So you have the various personalities. It's the overbearing creative director, the bumbling, executive producer who's really supposed to be in charge, but really isn't. And the sympathetic head programmer. And she's kind of earnest, but never really going to get anywhere. And all this, you have all these characters. F. Murray Abraham is the older guy who is he's a sci-fi novelist, a classic sci-fi novelist of the 80s, who once won second place Nova Award for his novel and has a big, has the on his mantle. And he's the chief narrative and, story writer. He writes the story behind Mythic Quest, but he doesn't get technology at all. And you have the sleazy, smarmy marketing guy who's all about how can we suck every penny out of the players and all this sort of stuff. And it all revolves around the game and these personalities. And it was fun at times. At times it was a little over the line, but it was mostly funny and interesting. There was one episode that was a total flashback that didn't involve any of the major characters, any of the characters we'd come to know. And it went back to, it really kind of followed this couple who met, started a game company back in the 90s, and it kind of followed their life together. They get married and ran this company together, and they end up, spoilers, they end up splitting up. But the whole episode is this journey with them through this, it was really touching. It was really well written, this journey through how the company brought them together and split them up, but yet they stayed. You could tell at the end of it that there was still something there between them, and it was very poignant. And at the end of it, it shows how this relates to our people in Mythic Quest by it kind of hands off the torch to them. As that company dissolves, Mythic Quest comes in and takes their place in that building, the same building that they were in. Anyway, so it's a decent show. So when the quarantine hit, the producers and writers wanted to come up with how do we do something with this? Like their first season had ended. They hadn't even started filming the second season, I think. And they're like, but we want to do something. So they came up with a quarantine edition where they, within 3 weeks, they came up with the idea, pitched it to Apple, wrote it, filmed it, edited it, and put it online. 3 weeks.
That's pretty impressive.
That's impressive. And so it all takes place in a kind of Zoom environment. And you think, oh, yes, we saw Parks and Rec did that. Everyone's doing that. Well, they were able to use the medium as more than just a gimmick, but to really help tell the story. And it was funny, and it really highlighted the personalities. You had the creative director who's so full of himself, and he's very rich from the game company that he sold before, but he's so into himself, and he's so self-involved. You can tell he's living in this beautiful mansion, and how awful it is to live into these conditions. And he's always like working out and showing up on the Zooms without his shirt on. It's like, you got to put your shirt on, dude. So you can't, the HR says you can't come out of the Zoom. We're not wearing a shirt. Yeah, that whole thing. The F. Murray Abraham guy is like, he can't figure out how to work Zoom. So he's like, the camera's off. Turn the camera on. No, the camera. No, now you're muted. Like it was really good. It was really funny and engaging. But at the end of it, there was the one character. Her name is Poppy. She's the head programmer, and she's Australian. And by the end of it, you could tell she's been working day and night. She lives alone. She's got nobody. And she's so disconnected from people. And at the end, she kind of breaks down and unburdens herself that, you know, but she's working so hard because she's trying to avoid recognizing that she doesn't have anyone in her life. She's all alone. And it's really, you know, and one character shows up, in full hazmat gear to just give her a hug, you know, and it was really touching. It was really well done. In fact, Apple has submitted it for an Emmy nomination, which is interesting. It was really like the whole thing was okay. It was, but that part of it really made the whole episode. It was really a beautiful character moment. So it was really nice. And technically it was really cool because they had Apple sent them like 40 iPhones and AirPods and how they had to film it. And it was very technical. It was really amazing. All the stars had to do their own costume, makeup, set design, you know, because they couldn't have people come. Right. So it was really fascinating. It was really interesting. So Mythic Quest Quarantine Edition. I also finished a book called The Aleph Extraction, which was a sci-fi spy novel.
Sci-fi spy.
Several hundred years in the future, mankind is divided and is colonized the galaxy, divided into two factions, the Imperium and the Commonwealth. And the Imperium is essentially like the Soviet Union. The Commonwealth is like the West, you know, U.S. and other countries. And they have a Cold War. So you have the Galactic Cold War and then you have spies. And it's really well done. I love spy novels. I like those sorts of things. And I like this, this novel is really good. It's got good humor, good action. It's called The Aleph Extraction, and it involves a mythical grail type object, which is really fun too. One last thing I read, which I just read today.
You've been busy.
Yes. Well, they actually went pretty quick. A new book from Word on Fire, they're giving away for free, an ebook called Catholicism in the Time of Coronavirus by Stephen Bullivant. I mean, I read it in like an hour and a half, 2 hours. A short book, but he does a pretty good job of going through like how the church can deal with, has been dealing with this particular time, how we can evangelize and carry out our mission of evangelization, the challenges that we're going to face. We can't assume that people are just going to come back to church because, that we're in tough times and that's what people do. They turn to God. That's true. But also here are these other things we need to consider as well. So he kind of goes to that, has a very clear-eyed look at that. He talks about the thing that he compares historically what Christians have done in times of pandemic and pestilence and reactions, and how a lot of it sort of mirrors what we're doing today, specifically like St. Charles Borromeo in Milan. He talks a lot about that and how the live streaming of masses is similar to them, St. Charles Borromeo, holding mass in the streets of the neighborhoods for people to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that. And then he talks about domestic church, about things that we can be doing at home. And he had a very good point. We're not just homeschooling our kids now. We're home churching them. They're not going to, we're not taking them to church for father to form them or for religious head to form them. It's all on us. Frankly, it has been our responsibility all along, but now it really is. And I was noticing, he was talking about different ways you can really help your kids to grow in faith in this time. And one of the things I noticed is our kids in our evening prayer together, with our bedtime prayer, their prayer intentions have really begun to become somewhat profound.
Yes.
Like what was it? Lucy has been praying lately.
Well, the other night she prayed for all those who have fallen away from
God.
God, I'm trying to remember how she worded it.
That those who have fallen away from God would come back, I think is what she said, something like that. Which, for a 7-year-old, I mean, it's not like we're prompting this. We're not giving her this. This is a formulation she came up with. Anthony regularly prays for all those who are sick from or who died from the coronavirus. It's something we don't spend a lot of time talking about the news, but we do talk about it, you and I,
right.
And they hear us talking about it. And when they ask questions, we answer them.
Right. And we try not to overwhelm them with too much detail, but we also try to not keep them in the dark. give them, you know, as much as they need. But I think that they should understand something of what's going on in the world.
Right. And I think they do. And we've always made it a point to talk about the news and things in the news and the things going on in the world in a kid appropriate manner. When I read the paper, I'll often talk to you about the things that come up in so that they're aware of things. And then when they, like Bella often comes to me and asks me questions, and I try to answer her as best I can in various ways, but and I can tell she's been integrating that.
Yes.
And she actually wants to join our conversations these days about those things, which is good because I want her to grow in this thing. I mean, she's becoming an adult. She needs to be able to talk about these things and understand these things.
It's sort of a distant first step for media literacy.
Yes.
not reading it themselves, but sort of listening to how one discusses it. And I think that sets a template for how to engage with it.
Right.
Even before they're actually engaging with it.
Right.
And I think we do with social media as well. Like they are aware, they aren't on Facebook, obviously, but they are aware that Facebook exists. And I think they have a general idea of what's on it and what people do with it, because they are kind of not literally looking, well, sometimes literally looking over our shoulders.
Yes. Stop looking over my shoulder.
But they're kind of, I think that being media savvy doesn't start when they have their own account. It starts long before that, when they're sort of watching. How are you engaging with it?
Yes. And not always well, I'll admit. I don't always engage with it well, but yes. But anyway, back to the bedtime prayers. I mean, it impresses me that this has become important to them, that has become part of their prayer life to think of these things. My mom has been having some health issues, and so they've been praying for my mom. And I mean, it's really nice. And the nightly prayer that we would be able to go to the vacation spot that we've been hoping to go to, that the situations will get to the point where we'll be able to go, and that sort of thing, that they know the power of prayer, and they understand the power of petition and intercession. So I think it's good. I think we're doing a good job. Anyway, the book is The Catholicism in the Time of Coronavirus. If you go to wordonfire.org, it's free. So you might as well download it and read it. It's a quick read, and it's worthwhile. It's definitely worthwhile. Stephen has a few kind of corny puns, which even I groaned at a little bit. But it's okay. So I think to wrap things up, I wanted to talk a little bit about Cardinal Sean's homily. It is the Feast of Pentecost.
It is.
He did say that the Pentecost is the Church's birthday. And the Holy Spirit is our gift.
Yeah, I liked that formulation.
And then as he finished his homily, he said, "Happy birthday, church," and walked back to the cathedra. But yeah, I mean, I've heard that before. Obviously, you know, today is the birthday of the church. This is the day that the church was born, when the apostles were given the gift of the Holy Spirit and sent out to preach. And they were empowered by the Spirit. He talked about the upper room where the apostles were gathered. And one of the things he mentioned was how, you know, Jesus breathed on them. In the gospel, it's about how Jesus, on the week after, not on Pentecost, but the Sun, you know, divine, what we have as Divine Mercy Sunday, but the first Sunday after Easter, Jesus appeared to them in this gospel and breathes on them, receive the Holy Spirit. What sins you forgive are forgiven. What sins you held bound are held bound, and gives them the power of the sacrament of confession. And Cardinal Sean pointed out that that was the same room they received the Eucharist in. And I realized the upper room is where we receive the four of the seven sacraments.
Right. Because there's
the Last Supper.
The Last Supper. So that's the Eucharist.
And that's also the institution of the priesthood.
Right.
So holy orders.
So holy orders. And then the Holy Spirit comes to them in the upper rooms on Pentecost. So that's confirmation.
And then when Jesus tells them what sins you forgive are forgiven, what sins you held bound are held bound, is confession.
Right. So
the upper room is a really important part of our faith.
That makes me really want to go there.
Well, and Cardinal Sean also mentioned, which was funny enough, that when he was there in 2013 with a pilgrimage of priests from the Archdiocese of Boston, he celebrated Mass in the upper room, which is a big deal. In fact, it's such a big deal that when he did that, I was working at the Archdiocese at the time in the new media team. When we excitedly published pictures and
information
about that.
I remember seeing the pictures. The pictures were awesome.
Yes, we published all this stuff. And then someone in Jerusalem said, you're not supposed to celebrate Mass in the upper room, or you're not supposed to tell people you did anyway. And so we quickly had to take all that stuff down.
Which was kind of sad.
Yeah.
I remember.
Politics. Yeah. Politics.
Right. The politics was sad. I remember the photographs. What struck me most was the structure of it. It was a room that had all of these like
domed
archway structure, which reminded me a lot of
vaults. Yeah.
Right. Vaulted. Yeah. Groin vault.
Groin vault. Yes.
Groin vault. It reminded me anyway of a lot of Fra Angelico's paintings in the monastery of San Marco.
I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway, I visited it in Florence when I was in Italy. And anyway, he was there was the monastery where he was, and he decorated all the individual cells. And but you see that dome structure in a lot of his paintings, those vaults and arches. And it was just kind of interesting that like their monastery echoed that architecture.
Now, obviously, the room doesn't look anything like it would have in Jesus's time.
Right.
It's been so modified and, you know, everything. I think one of the reasons why they weren't supposed to celebrate Mass is it's big part of the David's tomb compound. Like the King David's tomb is there in like, I don't know if it's in the first floor of the building or next to it or something.
So wait, Jesus was celebrating. Wait, hold on a minute. Yeah. You're blowing my mind here. Jesus celebrated the Last Supper.
On top of David's tomb? Yes.
No way.
Yes.
No way. Jesus, the son of David, celebrated the
king, the new king over the old king.
Okay. How come we never learn that?
Why? Did you not listen enough, Scott Hahn?
No, but seriously, like, how did I not know that?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
David's tomb is there. So it's pretty wild. I should ask George if he still got those pictures from the upper room, because my friend George Martel was the photographer with the Cardinal on that trip, and so took all the pictures that were there. So I'll be curious to see if he still has them. It would be nice to see it. So the Cardinal did mention that celebrating Mass in there, which would blow my mind. He also celebrated Mass in the tomb of the Holy Sepulchre, over the spot where Jesus's body laid in the tomb.
Those
pictures blew my mind too.
Oh my gosh!
Like George, there was three people could fit in inside the tomb at a time, and then all the other priests were gathered outside it. And so the altar is in the tomb, and so George was one of the three people in the tomb with the cardinal taking the pictures. Like, hello! Just he has had so many great experiences. It's amazing. So the other thing the cardinal said was that we can't just be solo disciples coming to church. It's not a me and thee. Church, being a Christian is a communal experience. It's not just me and God, me and thee. You can't just come to church when, as he put it, we were hatched, mashed, and dispatched. I love that he did that. Hatched, mashed, and dispatched. So baptism, marriage, and funeral. Church, going to church, being a Christian is a way of life. It was really good. It was a good homily. I'm glad. I'm gonna kind of miss listening to his homilies.
You know,
I might still watch it.
Right. You know, it's kind of funny. Like, of course, obviously, going to Mass
in person is
much better. But I do enjoy feeling connected to the Cardinal and watching his Masses and listening to his homilies and seeing the cathedral. I feel much more connected to him than I ever have before. And that's really a nice gift. I guess
he didn't do these televised Masses before this.
Right.
The Catholic TV had a daily Mass. They just did a regular daily Mass, and they had regular, you know, the regular priests of the Archdiocese. But ever since this has happened, the Cardinal has been celebrating this Mass every week for the diocese, which I give him all the credit for. And I kind of hope he continues it. I think it's something that the pastor for the diocese should do. I don't know. Maybe we'll see. I hope a lot of this becomes more permanent. Right. It's not, it doesn't just end when the lockdown ends.
Right. You know, I saw somebody saying that they were very sad that their parish was not going to live, was not planning to live stream the Mass anymore now that they were able to go back.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think you are losing something, because there are still people who are.
So people who can't go to Mass.
You can't go to Mass.
At least around here. I mean, most places it's still reduced capacity.
Well, and even if it wasn't reduced capacity, I'm sure there's still people who are in high risk groups who are being told not to.
Oh, just go watch the EWTN or Catholic TV Mass as the, you know.
But that's not the same thing as is watching your own parish community or.
You know what, Father Roderick, who, you know, our friend who helped found, who's one of the founders of SQPN, what he's going to do, what he started and he's going to continue to do, he does a Mass for Geeks every Sunday.
I really like this idea.
Where he does a Mass for an international audience on the internet, on his YouTube channel, where he brings, for his homily, he brings in, you know, related content from science fiction and, you know, geeky topics, whether it's Lego or Star Wars or comic books or whatever. You know, today for the Feast of Pentecost, I didn't get to watch his homily today, but he brought in R2-D2 for some reason, like something having to do with R2-D2 and the Holy Spirit. You know, but what he's doing is making connections with people, and he's doing this on an international level. And he's been saying like he's getting people who have never seen Catholic Mass before, have never watched the Mass.
That's amazing.
Right.
That's evangelization right there. And I think that I've heard anecdotally that a lot of people have been tuning in to live streamed masses who would otherwise not have set foot in a Catholic church. And because there's so many of them, because so many parishes were live streaming Mass, they're really easy to find. People were posting them on Facebook and YouTube. And
this is what Stephen Bullivant was talking about in Catholicism in the time of coronavirus, is this experience of all of these masses being available, and not just for people who aren't Catholic yet or who aren't Christian, but even for those of us who have been daily, you know, weekly Mass goers, you can try out masses in different rites. You can try out masses if you have always been curious with the extraordinary form. I mean, you can see what Mass is like in Texas or in, well,
my,
you know,
my mom
Washington.
My mom has been like going crazy and watching live stream masses all over the planet.
Right.
And I have to say, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did tune into my sister's, has been going to a Byzantine rite parish, and I tuned into a little bit of their divine liturgy and thought, this is really kind of cool. I can, you know, hop in and see what's going on.
And the barrier to entry is low. You don't have to feel awkward going in and worrying that you're not going to know what you do. People are going to be looking at you.
I'm the weirdo who doesn't know what to do. And now I can sit back and kind of watch without having to fully engage. Now, obviously, going in person and then engaging would be a higher level of engagement.
Well, or at least the next threshold. I mean, these are threshold moments. And the threshold, the barrier is much lower for people who are curious.
It's an opportunity for those who are curious to be able to enter in and have some of their curiosity not only satisfied, but maybe even whetted further.
Yes. I mean, this is what we do with SQPN. We have shows about Doctor Who and Star Trek and Disney. And we have these shows not because we're trying to trick people into listening to Catholic content, but because we're Catholics who talk about these things. And it's an opportunity for people to get to know us and to be curious about more and to seek out more. If what they find is interesting to them, and maybe they'll listen to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, or maybe they'll listen to Catholics of Oz, or, you know what I mean? It's an opportunity for people to explore. And so it's the same thing. If someone watches a live stream Mass and then they get interested, then maybe they'll, you know, someday when anyone can go to a church at any time, they'll go check out a Mass. I mean, especially, and this is especially important now when Masses are reduced capacity and you got to sign up for a ticket to go and all this other stuff. It's especially important that we have this stuff available for people, not just those who are already Catholic, but for those who might have the Holy Spirit prompting them to check it out. So, So good. That's a very good Pentecost topic.
Evangelization through.
Go forth and make disciples of all nations.
Right. Through the internet.
Through the internet. That's what we're about.
Which goes back to something that Pope Benedict said like a decade ago about evangelizing the digital continent.
Yes.
I mean, it seems to me that perhaps the Holy Spirit is taking this moment of pandemic and global crisis, which is
a bad thing.
A bad thing.
But
of course, we know that God takes bad things and brings greater good out of them. And it seems to me that we can see some hints that some of the greater good that God might be bringing out is forcing us to use a lot of these technology tools to connect with each other and to connect with other people as well.
All these priests and bishops who are so reluctant to, oh, that technology stuff. Oh, yeah. Here, try it. And that's kind of, they've been forced to try it. And it's worked. They're using it. So it's
interesting.
It's good. I think that should wrap it up for this week. And we don't want to go on too much longer. So let's take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Patricia V, Michael A, Eric M, Mario L, and Earl P. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So if you have any feedback you'd like to give to us on our discussion, you can do that by going to sqpn.com/bets. That's B-E-T-T-S. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And of course, I'll put all those links to from our discussion in the show notes at sqpn.com. If you have not yet done so, please subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or at the SQPN YouTube channel, where you should hit the bell to get notifications. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.